Imagine taking the most terrifying heavyweight fighter on the planet, putting him in a boxing ring, and demanding that he throw punches at only one-third of his actual speed.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a complete joke, right?
Exactly. You have this, this ultimate apex predator who's capable of taking someone's head off, and you're forcing him to move like he's underwater.
Right, like a slow motion drill.
But this incredibly counterintuitive rule wasn't a joke at all. It was actually the secret weapon of Custiomato.
The legendary trainer.
Yes, the guy who engineered absolute phenoms like Mike Tyson, Floyd Patterson, Jose Torres. Today, we are heading into some incredibly intense and honestly just fascinating territory. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Our mission today is dedicated to you, the listener, and your own personal journey to mastery. We are unpacking the closely guarded system of Custiomato. Specifically, we're looking at Chapter 10 of the source material, the structure of his training, to figure out exactly how he built world champions. Okay, let's unpack this. We're looking at a system that, on the surface, might just seem like a really tough workout routine.
That's not.
Right. In reality, it operates like a masterclass in psychological engineering.
Yeah, to truly understand how this system operates, you have to completely throw out the traditional idea of, going to the gym.
Which is hard for most people to do.
It is, because most of us treat self-improvement like a punch clock. We
Yeah.
do our hour of coding or our 60 minutes of cardio, and then we clock out.
Right. You go home, take a shower, revert to your normal self.
Exactly. But for D'Amato, training was a 24-hour, all-encompassing lifestyle. And he divided this lifestyle into two distinct but deeply connected spheres. First, you have what he called the external circle. This is entirely focused on the mind, the philosophy, and forging the iron will of the
The
individual.
mindsets,
Right.
right.
And second, you have the internal circle, which is the physical execution, the actual boxing skills, and the tactics.
Okay, so the core secret of this entire philosophy is that these two circles are constantly rotating, right? They're feeding off one another every single hour of the day.
Every single hour.
So before a fighter even throws a punch or, smells the sweat of the boxing gym, which is that internal circle, they have to conquer their own mind in the external circle.
They do.
And the very first step of this external circle is beyond intense. It's called the circle of will. And step one of forging that will is total uncompromising isolation.
Which sounds terrifying.
It really does. Tom Patti, who was a student of D'Amato and actually lived with him, described this setup as being akin to living in a monastic cell or joining a chivalric order. You are completely cut off from society.
No calls from mom.
Exactly. No calls from mom, no girlfriends, no friends asking where you've been all weekend. It's like a radical, mandatory digital detox, but for your entire identity and your social life.
Yeah.
But I have to push back here. Isn't this level of isolation a bit, well, extreme for anyone who isn't trying to win a heavyweight title?
It definitely sounds that way.
Right. Like, how does forced isolation actually forge character rather than just breed resentment or, make someone completely crack under the pressure?
Well, what's fascinating here is the psychology behind that exact question and why D'Amato viewed that breaking point not as a risk, but as an absolute requirement.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because human beings are naturally wired to seek comfort.
Okay.
We constantly use our social circles as like pressure relief valves.
Right, when things get tough at work, we complain to a friend over drinks.
Exactly. When we feel insecure, we let a family member coddle us and tell us it's going to be okay. But by temporarily removing those relationships, you eliminate every single emotional safety net.
There's nowhere to hide.
Nowhere. When your mother isn't calling to check on you, and your friends aren't inviting you out to blow off steam, you reach this terrifying but really clarifying realization
That you're on your own.
that you have absolutely no other choice and no escape. You are forced to face the reality of the work in front of you. You just stop relying on excuses.
And that brings us to the psychological framework D'Amato introduced to his fighters while they were in this isolation, which is the I want, I don't want model.
Yes, this is huge.
It completely flips how we usually think about motivation. I mean, most of us think saying I want something is empowering,
Yeah,
right?
you put it on a vision board.
Right. You say, I want a promotion or I want to be a champion. And that's supposed to drive you. But D'Amato argued that the moment you say I want, you automatically trigger four negative things: fear, emotions, pain, and anxiety.
Right, because your brain is basically a prediction machine based on past experiences.
Okay, explain that.
Well, you've wanted things before,
Right.
and you've been disappointed.
Yeah.
You've put your heart into a goal and failed. So your subconscious instantly associates the desire of I want with the fear of failure or the anxiety of the unknown.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
And the flip side of that model is equally destructive, the I don't want.
Right, the avoidance side of things, like I don't want to get knocked out. Or in a normal person's life, I don't want to look stupid in front of my boss.
Exactly. When you focus on what you don't want, you create a psychological paralysis. Your brain fixates on the negative outcome, which makes you hesitate.
And in boxing, hesitation gets you knocked out.
Yes. And in a corporate environment, hesitation means you miss the opportunity. So the isolation of the monastic cell forces the trainee to confront this restrictive psychological loop head on.
Because they can't distract themselves.
Exactly. In that closed environment, you can't run away when the anxiety of I want or the fear of I don't want hits you. You have to sit there and dismantle your own mental barriers.
It's like a total ego death. You have to realize that the pain and fear you feel are really just byproducts of not having the right skills yet.
That's the key.
The desire to win and the fear of losing become completely irrelevant. All that matters is the execution of the system.
Skill and will.
Right. D-Motto is forcing them to fully embrace a skill and will mindset. The only way out of the anxiety of the monastic cell is through absolute mastery of the craft.
And this foundational forging of the will, it lasts for a grueling 2.5 months.
Every day training.
Every day, 7 days a week. It's like locking yourself in a room to study for the hardest exam of your life without a single distraction. You do that, and you finally have a mind that is totally locked in.
But once that mental armor is forged, that raw, focused willpower needs a physical outlet, right? I mean, mental discipline alone doesn't block a left hook.
No, it certainly doesn't.
Okay, so you've spent 10 weeks stripping away your ego. You're mentally bulletproof. How does D'Amato translate that iron will into physical dominance?
Well, this is where we step out of the monastic cell and onto the canvas.
We move from the external circle of the mind to the internal circle of the body.
Exactly. And this internal circle, the circle of skills, is just as methodical as the psychological isolation.
It operates in these distinct stages, right?
Yeah, stage one is entirely about the surgical correction of mistakes. A fighter starts just shadow boxing in front of a mirror. Instructors are standing right there, instantly critiquing every minor mechanical flaw.
Like your elbow is flared or your weight is too far forward.
Right. Then they use highly specific tools to fix those specific physical flaws.
So the equipment in D'Amato's gym isn't just used for a generic tire yourself out sweat session.
Not at all. It is entirely prescriptive. Mm-hmm. Think of it like a doctor prescribing physical therapy.
Okay.
If a fighter has a mechanical error in their balance or footwork, they are assigned to the jump rope.
Because the jump rope forces you to find your center of gravity. You physically cannot do it if you are off balance.
Exactly. If there's a flaw in their precision or timing, they go to the punch bag or the speed bag. If they lack the kinetic chain required for physical power, they are assigned to the heavy bag to learn how to drive energy from the floor through their hips.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. A massive component of this stage one mistake correction is sparring. Going back to what we talked about at the very beginning, they spar at a fraction of normal energy and speed.
Half effort or even one-third speed.
Right. They do it in this constant loop.
Wow.
Exercise, spar, analyze, repeat. But honestly, if you were training someone to be the most ferocious, terrifying fighter on the planet, doesn't sparring at one-third power completely defeat the purpose of a fight?
It seems like it would.
Right. Like, how do you prepare for war by moving in slow motion?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture of how the human brain actually learns and maps motor skills, it makes perfect sense.
Okay, how so?
You cannot fix a micromechanical flaw while you're moving at 100 miles per hour under the very real threat of severe physical trauma.
Because you're just trying to survive.
Exactly. The brain's amygdala hijacks the prefrontal cortex in those moments. You revert to pure survival instinct. By slowing the sparring down to one-third speed, D'Amato removed the panic. He treated sparring as an intellectual exercise, like a real-time puzzle.
That makes a lot of sense. You're mapping the neural pathways perfectly.
Yes.
At one-third speed, the fighter can actually see the openings form. They can feel their weight distribution mid-punch. They are building pristine muscle memory so that when the velocity is finally added back in, the mechanics hold up under pressure.
They don't have to think. The body just knows the geometry.
And this meticulous correction transitions seamlessly into stage two of the internal circle, which is independent training.
Yes, and at this point, a profound shift happens. The instructors physically step back.
They stop coaching.
They stop correcting the fighter's actual punches. Instead, they only correct the methodology of how the fighter is training themselves.
So the fighter has to become their own diagnostician. That is a massive leap. It's one thing to have a coach tell you that your left hand is dropping. It's another thing entirely to realize it yourself, walk over to the mirror, and prescribe your own shadow boxing routine to fix it.
But the ultimate goal of any great teacher is to make themselves obsolete, right?
Right.
D'Amato wanted his fighters to internalize the system so deeply that they didn't need him in the corner during a title fight.
Because in the ring, they're alone.
Right. If a fighter gets hit with an uppercut in round three, they can't wait for the bell to ring so the coach can tell them what went wrong. They have to diagnose the flaw in real time, adjust their posture, and eliminate the opening.
Wow.
By correcting the methodology during training, D'Amato ensured the fighters were learning how to learn.
Which sets the stage perfectly for stage three, tactical polishing. This is where they utilize pad work to actually shape the impending fight. We've all seen videos of fighters hitting mitts looking flashy for the cameras. But in D'Amato's system, this isn't an aerobic exercise. Kevin Rooney, D'Amato's protege, would hold the pads for Mike Tyson, and they were orchestrating specific tactical geometry.
They are simulating the dimensions, the habits, and the blind angles of the specific opponent they are about to face.
Slipping under a simulated jab, pivoting to a blind spot, setting a mechanical trap.
And a single training session could encompass all three of these stages, or just hyper-focus on one.
So a Monday might be a grueling session of purely correcting balance mistakes.
Right. Tuesday is tactical pad work, simulating a taller opponent. Wednesday is entirely independent diagnosis. The internal circle is this churning engine, constantly refining the physical vessel.
Okay, so we've explored the external mind and the internal body. We have the isolation and the dismantling of fear on one hand, and the prescriptive heavy bags and slow motion sparring on the other. But this deep dive really hinges on the engine that drives them both simultaneously. How do these two massive undertakings actually interact without causing complete psychological and physical burnout?
Well, this is where D'Amato's genius moves from coaching into lifestyle architecture. It is the concept of the 24-hour machine.
The 24-hour machine.
The training literally never stops.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't break the fighter because it operates as a continuous balanced rotation. These two circles rotate continuously, but in opposite directions.
Okay.
The external circle, the philosophy, the psychology, the study, the mind, rotates counterclockwise. The internal circle, the physical tactics, the methodology, the gym work, rotates clockwise.
So what does this all mean in the context of a 24-hour day? A fighter wakes up, and instead of just eating breakfast and going for a run, they might start by reading a book on history or studying a psychological concept.
That's the external circle engaging.
Then they walk into the physical gym for their shadow boxing and tactical pad work.
That's the internal circle engaging.
And the moment they leave the sweaty gym, they don't just zone out in front of a television. They immediately return to philosophical study or reviewing fight tape. Study gym, study gym. It is a seamless loop.
And over time, as the fighter gains mastery and that iron will solidifies, the external circle requires less dedicated, isolated time. It begins to integrate into normal daily life.
Oh, I see.
So after that grueling initial 2.5 month period of monastic isolation, fighter can slowly reintroduce the world. They can see their family, they can interact with friends.
The 24-hour obsession transforms from a forced, painful isolation into a natural, humming lifestyle.
Exactly. You might only need one dedicated day of pure philosophical reset instead of living it 7 days a week.
It's exactly like the gears of a mechanical watch. You have the external gear of the mind spinning counterclockwise and the internal gear of the body spinning clockwise.
Yeah, great analogy.
And it's actually that opposing friction, the tension between the mind's pursuit of abstract perfection and the body's gritty physical reality of making mistakes, that drives the hands of the watch forward. The friction creates the momentum.
It does.
But there is a severe warning attached to this machine. D'Amato made it very clear. As you gain mastery, you can reduce your gym days. You can drop down to 5 days a week of physical training to rest your body. But you must never stop the external circle.
Never.
You can never stop the psychological and philosophical study. Stopping the external circle means you instantly start falling off the mountain.
Think about the physics of climbing a steep mountain.
Yeah.
The moment you stop actively climbing, gravity doesn't just let you hang out peacefully on the cliff face.
Right. Gravity immediately starts pulling you downward.
In any field, this raises an important question about how we view success and longevity. Many champions in boxing, in business, in the arts lose their titles specifically because they abandon the external circle.
They get comfortable.
They reach the top, they get the championship belt or the CEO title, and they think, I've made it. Mm-hmm. I just need to hit the gym a few hours a day, or I just need to show up to the board meetings to maintain this.
And they completely abandon the philosophical study, the psychological discipline, and the mental research that actually built their foundation.
Yep.
They start hanging out with the entourage. They lose that ascetic mindset from the monastic cell. They think their physical skills or their raw talent are enough to sustain them.
And D'Amato proved time and again that the technology of success must remain a permanent lifestyle. It cannot be treated as a temporary workout routine to reach a specific goal.
Right.
When you separate the mental technology from your daily lifestyle, you become incredibly vulnerable. But as long as you are living the system 24 hours a day, keeping both gears turning, you become untouchable. Your opponent isn't fighting a man. They are fighting an unbreakable technology.
That is incredibly profound. And it brings us right back to you, the listener. Because at the end of the day, Kusumato wasn't just building boxers. He was engineering a framework for ultimate mastery that applies to literally anything you do.
Absolutely.
Let's say you are trying to master a complex new coding language, or you're prepping for a massive career-defining corporate presentation, or even just diving deep into learning a new hobby. You can apply this 24-hour philosophy tomorrow.
You really can.
You don't just need the internal practice, you know, the hours typing at the keyboard or practicing your speech in the mirror. If you only do the physical repetition, you will eventually burn out, or you'll plateau because you won't know how to diagnose your own mistakes.
You need the external philosophy.
Exactly. You need the psychological framework to deal with the fear of failure. You need the reading, and you need that mental isolation to sustain the physical practice. It's a shortcut to mastery that cuts right through the dreaded information overload of modern life, because it forces you to focus only on what builds your personal system and throw out everything else.
It requires a complete, unyielding alignment of what you do with who you're choosing to become. And if D'Amato firmly believed that abandoning the external circle of psychological and philosophical study guarantees a rapid fall from the mountain, even for undisputed, invincible world champions, well, what is the external circle in your own life? What foundational mindset, what psychological discipline or philosophical study have you been neglecting simply because you are too obsessed with grinding through your daily internal tasks?
Think about that invisible arena, because the clock never actually stops. Until next time.